Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Bonds, come here. Bonds, come here.
They say the animals mimic their owners. That's why my cat sleeps and your dog has perfect timing.
Stared at your partner. All right, hang on. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Brisdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make the day make sense. Bonsai, come here. Come here. Come on.
And I'm Kimberly Adams. It is What Did We Miss Monday? And clearly Bonsai is here for it, where we will give you the big news story on our minds and some of the stories from the weekend that we did not want you to miss. You have the Bonsai situation under control over there,
Guy? I got Bonsai. She's in here. I'm giving her a little scritch on the bottom of her chin, and she's happy for now.
Aww.
So we'll see. I think the kids just came home from school is the deal. I don't know. Oh, there's the collar. All right. Anyway, yes. So we'll do a little news, we'll do a Make Me Smile, and then we will be on our way. I think, so here we are, day what, 12, 13 of this thing? I think we're still agreed that the big story is Russia and Ukraine and all the horribleness. It's absolutely, I find it very difficult to think about anything else, to be honest with you. Kind of.
Yeah, and it's like they're attempting to start the peace talks. They don't seem to be going very well, and I was really struck by the whole humanitarian corridors thing led to Russia and Belarus, and even those weren't actually safe.
Yep, totally. It's unbelievable. And that actually gets me to my first sort of thing that I want to make sure everybody had a chance to see. Oh, and they changed the link. Drat, New York Times. Okay, so for those of you who went to the New York Times homepage yesterday or saw the front page of the actual physical paper today, there was a picture by Lindsay Addario, which is just amazing. A family of four who were walking across the street carrying wheeling their roller suitcases that had been shelled, and they were lying there dead, three of them dead, one of them dying, on the street. And Lindsay took the picture, as she should have, because we have to see this stuff. But then I think the really remarkable decision editorially was the New York Times put it on the front page, and they didn't do any graphic content warning. They didn't do anything. They put it on the front page of the paper above the fold and the front page of the website. And I think that's remarkable, and it's obviously it's horrible, but I think it's really good, and it's really important that that we all see this stuff. And I know we're inundated with it. I know we are, but that one just kind of hit me because it was kids, and they were anyway.
I'm looking at it now. It's horrible. That is war. That is what war actually looks like, and I think a lot of times we don't see here what war actually looks like. You see the aftermath. You see the bombed out buildings and the bullet riddled cars, but you don't necessarily see this part. And you're right; it is important.
Yeah, I think we should see that. So that's item one, and then item two is, and I believe I predicted this last week, that the political pressure is growing on President Biden. I kind of thought it was going to happen over the weekend that he was going to make the decision. Political pressure is growing on President Biden, no matter what the Europeans do, because it's a much tougher sell for them because they're so dependent on Russian oil and gas. But the president is now facing increasing pressure from his own party to cut off Russian oil and gas imports to the United States. And that, while not in absolute terms, a big deal, right? We don't get a whole bunch of Russian oil. It's incredibly symbolic. And with gas at my local station at 549 yesterday, That's $5.49. It's, you know, it's a thing that's going to have some ripple effects. And I also don't think that's a bad idea, frankly, if I can just lay it out there. I think, you know, we need to be aware of and prepared to, you know, sort of pay a little bit of the cost, which is probably not going to make me very popular. I don't know.
I remember, I guess it was last week, maybe the week before, where you were citing, and I think somebody brought it up in the weekly wrap about the polling that showed that U.S. consumers were willing to pay a little bit more if it meant sort of cracking down on Russia. And I'd be very curious if they run that poll again, how people are feeling now that they're actually starting to see it.
Yeah. Well, so this was, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and it was Heather Long at the Washington Post on a new Washington Post ABC News poll. And it, you know, are you willing to, you know, have your costs go up if the sanctions take hold? And it was like 60-20 yes. And then the question was, what if gas goes to $4? And I will tell you today, it's $4.11. And 2 weeks ago, with a hypothetical $4 gas, it was like 51-30, right? So the positives went down and the negatives went way up. And I'll promise you today, we will say, oh, no, heck no, 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 no. Yeah.
Although there's a lot of public support for Ukraine right now on the way home from the office today. I saw a protest outside McDonald's with a bunch of people with Ukrainian flags because it's one of the companies that has not yet, had either pulled – I don't know how you pull your operations if you're McDonald's, but at least shut down or done anything.
Right.
People are upset at McDonald's. I saw a Reuters piece that the U.S. may go it alone, and the pressure, but that's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be
super hard.
So Russia related, I've been following over the weekend the story of WNBA player Brittany Griner, who has been held in Russia for like 3 weeks, and you know, they supposedly detained her because she had a vape pen that, you know, had something that wasn't supposed to be in it. But also, Russia has some pretty strict anti-LGBTQ laws. It could have been that could have been a reason for detention, but also just so happened to detain her in the lead up to this big fight with Ukraine and invasion of Ukraine and fight with the U.S. So she's been detained for a couple of weeks now. Her wife has been posting on Instagram about how awful this is. U.S. officials are saying it's going to be pretty hard to get her out. They're working on getting all the Americans, you know, in Russia out.
Yeah.
But it's, again, what happens in war. And the other part of this story that I think is fascinating is it's highlighting why one of the top players in the WNBA is even in Russia, which is that they make so much less in comparison to male players that they end up playing throughout Europe in the off season to make up for the difference in income, or even just to sort of make enough income. And so there's quite a few sports writers talking about how this woman would not even be in Russia if not for pay disparity in the NBA versus the WNBA. So that is one thing. I also wanted to point to this report that actually came out today, not over the weekend, from the Biden administration, where the Biden administration is claiming, according to a Treasury Department report, that sort of the consolidation of corporate power in the United States suppresses wages by about 20%, that corporations hold so much power in this country that even during the Great Resignation, even though there's, you know, staffing shortages and labor shortages throughout the economy and worker rate wages are rising, nevertheless, corporate power keeps U.S. wages 20% lower because in many areas, you know, look into the term monopsony, if you're really interested about it, when you have a couple of key players in an industry sort of setting the standard for what wages are, you know, you don't even have to have a cartel if there's only two companies, you know, or one company that provides the jobs in a particular sector in a particular area, then it keeps wages down. So that is a very interesting counterpoint to sort of the workers have all the power, you know, moment that we're supposedly in right now. Okay. Last thing, which is that COVID, the pandemic, is still happening.
Yes.
And
yes,
global COVID-19 deaths surpassed 6 million people globally. We're creeping up on 1 million of those folks being in the U.S. alone. And just marking the moment that the pandemic is not over. And in line with that, this week you can order another round of those free COVID tests from USPS.
I did it this morning, too,
for myself and my grandma and my Uncle David's and all that stuff. So if you need more rapid tests, you can order those again starting from today. So those are all of my things.
Those are great things. And I will just add one more thing. So Friday is 2 years of this pandemic, which to me is just amazeballs. It just, I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Truly amazing. Yeah. Okay. So, Charlton, would you? All right. On Mondays, our Make Me Smiles come from you guys instead of us because we just did all that news for you. But today, it comes from Bridget Bonder, our very own senior producer. And here's what it's about. The Tennessee Aquarium and an electric eel they have named Miguel Watson, W-A-T-T-S-O-N. You see what they did there? Sorry, just kidding.
I didn't notice that until just now, even though I looked at this earlier. Watson. Okay. Back in 2015, the Tennessee Aquarium set Miguel Watson up with his own Twitter account, which is Electric Miguel, with the two E's at the beginning for eel, because they're apparently all about the puns, wherein the tweets for this account are generated by Miguel's own electricity. And he's still tweeting. And so some of the tweets that, you know, Miguel Watson sent out today included zap, zippy, bonk.
It's his own electricity, which is kind of wild, right? Yeah. If you go to his Twitter main page, there's like an explainer video on how it all works. But here's the thing. This account of an electric eel has 65,000 followers. I don't. Twitter is amazing to me sometimes. Amazing.
Because think about that. You're looking at your timeline on a given day, and it's just like death, destruction, horror, zap.
Zap.
Bonk.
Oh,
my goodness. Sort of like in Big Bang Theory, where it's just like a random bazinga.
Oh, I know. Bazinga. Yeah. So, anyway, props to Bridget for that one. Props to
Bridget.
Yes,
I love that one.
There we go. And on a Monday, we're done. I know. It's electric eel. We're done. So tomorrow we're going to do, we're going to get a little more serious, actually. Misinformation, disinformation, and the information war that is part of what's going on over in Ukraine, because it is huge, right? From the good guys to the bad guys, everybody's using it. And we'll talk a little bit about how it's playing over there.
Yeah. And before we, before I tell you how to send in your own Make Me Smart question, I do want to actually, you reminded me, Kai, flag your point that you tweeted about this morning about prisoners of war and that video that went kind of viral of a Russian prisoner of war in Ukraine sort of talking about how none of them knew what they were doing or what they were getting into and all these things. And as you pointed out, it's a violation of the Geneva Conventions.
Yeah, and it's also just, look, I mean, war is wrong and terrible, but exploiting those in your custody it's not right. And so don't do it. Don't do it.
But it's also sort of, you know, one of the ways that information warfare is happening around this conflict. And so if you have questions about that or misinformation or disinformation, on whatever side of the conflict, you can send us those things. And also, if you have been thinking about your answer to the Make Me Smart question, which is what is something you thought you knew that you later found out you were wrong about, you can send it our way as well, either as a voice memo or in an email. And for any of those things, you can send it to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can call and leave us a voice message at 508-UB-SMART.
All right, we are done. We are done. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera with help from Mark A. Green. Charlton Thorpe was in charge today down at the studios.
Yes, and our senior producer is Bridget Bodner, who had that wonderful make me smile, even though I kind of brought us down at the end. And our director of On Demand is Donna Tam. Wasn't it like a 50s song where it's like, Donna, Donna, something like that?
I need to find it. Yeah.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.